He built up the fire and went to bed, lay listening to his mother's snores. Had she guessed? Maybe she wouldn't. The custodians often waited for night. He would tell her she had slept through everything. He could not sleep. Who knew about the death? If word got out, people would wonder. They would begin to suspect the unsuspectable. What if Raven got caught? Would the inquisitors make him talk? Bullock could make a stone sing. He watched his mother all next morning. She did not speak, except in monosyllables, but that was her custom. Raven appeared shortly after noon. "Tea and a bowl of porridge, Shed." When he paid, he did not shove copper across the counter. Shed's eyes widened. 10 silver leva lay before him. 10. For one dead old man. That was a third, and Raven had done this before. He must be rich. Shed's palms grew moist. His mind howled after potential crimes. "Shed," Raven said softly when he delivered the tea and porridge, "don't even think about it."
"What?"
"Don't think what you're thinking. You would end up in the wagon." Darling scowled at them from the kitchen doorway. For a moment, Raven seemed embarrassed. Shed slunk into the hostel where Crag held court. From the outside, the place was as crummy as the Lily. Timidly, he looked for Count, tried to ignore Asa. Count would not torment him for fun.
"Count, I need to see Crag."
Count opened big brown cow eyes.
"Why?"
"I brought him some money, on account."
Count heaved himself upright.
"All right, wait here."
He stalked off. Asa sidled up.
"Where'd you get the money, Shed?"
"Where do you get yours, Asa?" Asa did not answer. "It isn't polite to ask. Mind your own business or stay away from me."
"Shed, I thought we were friends."
"I tried to be friends, Asa. I even let you have a place to sleep. And as soon as you hooked up with Crag..." A shadow crossed Asa's face.
"I'm sorry, Shed. You know me. I don't think so fast. I do dumb things."
Shed snorted. So Asa had come to the inevitable conclusion. Crag would dump him once he settled with Raven. Shed was tempted to betray Raven. The man had to have a fortune hidden. But he was afraid of 1,000 things, and his guest stood at the top of the list. Asa said,
"I found a way to get Deadwood from the enclosure."
His face brightened in pathetic appeal.
"Mostly pine, but it's wood."
"The enclosure?"
"It's not illegal, Shed. It keeps the enclosure cleaned up."
Shed scowled righteously.
"Shed, it's less wrong than going through somebody's..."
Shed controlled his anger. He needed allies inside the enemy camp. "Firewood could be like money, Asa. No provenance." Asa smiled fawningly.
"Thanks, Shed."
Count called.
"Shed!"
Shed shook as he crossed the room. Crag's men smirked. This wouldn't work. Crag wouldn't listen. He was going to throw his money away.
"Count says you've got something to give me on account," Crag said.
Crag's den could have been ripped whole from a mansion high up the wall of the valley. Shed was stunned.
"Stop gawking and get on with it. You'd better not give me a handful of copper and beg for an extension, either. Picked a warm doorway yet? Your payments are a joke, Shed." "No joke, Mr. Crag. Honest, I can pay over half of it."
Crag's eyebrows rose. "Interesting." Shed laid 9 silver leva before him. "Very interesting." He fixed Shed with a penetrating stare. Shed stammered,
"That's over half, counting interest. I hoped maybe seeing as how that would put me ahead..."
"Quiet." Shed shut up.
"You think I should forget what happened?"
"That wasn't my fault, Mr. Crag. I didn't tell him to..." "You don't know what Raven is like."
"Shut up."
Crag stared at the coins.
Maybe something can be arranged. I know you didn't put him up to it. You don't have the guts. Shed stared at the floor, unable to deny his cowardice. Okay, Shed, you're a regular client. Back to the regular schedule. He eyed the money. You're ahead 3 weeks, looks like.
Thank you, Mr. Cragg. Really, you don't know how much this means.
Shut up. I know exactly what it means. Get out. Start getting another payment together. This is your last reprieve.
Yes, sir.
Shed retreated. Count opened the door.
Shed, I may want something sometime. A favor for a favor. Understand?
Yes, sir.
All right. Go.
Shed left, a sinking feeling replacing relief. Cragg would make him help get Raven. He almost wept as he tramped homeward. It never got any better. He was always in a trap. Chapter 10 Tally Turnaround. Tome was typical of towns we had garrisoned recently. Small, dirty, boring. One wondered why the lady bothered. What use were these remote provinces? Did she insist they bend the knee merely to puff her ego? There was nothing here worth having, unless it was power over the natives. Even they viewed their country with a certain contempt. The presence of the Black Company strained the resources of the area. Within a week, the captain started talking about shifting a company to Hart and billeting smaller units in the villages. Our patrols seldom encountered the rebel, even when our wizards helped hunt. The engagement at Maedl's had all but eliminated the infestation. The lady's spies told us the few committed rebels left had fled into Tambor, an even bleaker kingdom to the northeast. I supposed Tambor would be our next mission. I was scribbling away at these annals one day when I decided I needed an estimate of the mileage we'd covered in our progression eastward. I was appalled to learn the truth. Tome was 2,000 miles east of Charm, far beyond the bounds of the Empire as it had existed 6 years ago. The great bloody conquests of the Taken Whisper had established a border arc just this side of the Plain of Fear. I ran down the line of city-states forming that forgotten frontier. Frost and Aid, Thud and Barnes and Rust, where the rebel had defied the lady successfully for years. Huge cities all, formidable, and the last such we had seen. I still shuddered, recalling the Plain of Fear. We crossed it under the aegis of Whisper and Feather, two of the Taken, the lady's black apprentices, both sorceresses, orders of magnitude above our three puny wizards. Even so, and traveling with entire armies of the lady's regulars, we suffered there. It is a hostile, bitter land, where none of the normal rules apply. Rocks speak and whales fly. Coral grows in the desert. Trees walk, and the inhabitants are the strangest of all. But that is neither here nor there, just a nightmare from the past. A nightmare that haunts me still when the screams of cougar and fleet come echoing down the corridors of time, and once again I can do nothing to save them. "What's the trouble?" Elmo asked, slipping the map from beneath my fingers, cocking his head sideways. "Look like you saw a ghost." "Just remembering the Plain of Fear."
"Oh, yeah. Well, buck up. Have a beer." He slapped my back. "Hey, Kingpin, where the hell you been?"
He charged away in pursuit of the company's leading malingerer. One Eye arrived a moment later, startling me.
"How's Goblin?" he asked softly.
There had been no intercourse between them since Maedl's. He eyed the map.
"The Empty Hills. Interesting name. Also called the Hollow Hills. He's all right. Why don't you check him out?"
"What the hell for? He was the one who acted the ass. Can't take a little joke."
"Your jokes get a bit rough, One Eye."
Yeah, maybe. Tell you what, you come with me. Got to prepare my reading. One night a month, the captain expects me to exhort the troops with a reading from the annals, so we'll know where we came from, so we'll recall our ancestors in the outfit. Once that meant a lot. The Black Company, the last of the free companies of Katovar. All brethren, tight, great esprit, us against the world, and let the world watch out.
But the something that had manifested itself in Goblin's behavior, in the low-grade depression of Elmo and others, was affecting everybody. The pieces were coming unglued. I had to pick a good reading, from a time when the company had its back against the wall and survived only by clinging to its traditional virtues. There have been many such moments in 400 years. I wanted one recorded by one of the more inspired analysts, one with the fire of a White Rose revivalist speaking to potential recruits. Maybe I needed a series, one that I could read several nights running.
Crap, One Eye said. You know those books by heart. Always got your nose in them. Anyway, you could fake the whole thing, and nobody would know the difference.
Probably, and nobody would care if I did.
It's going sour, old-timer.
Right. Let's go see Goblin.
Maybe the annals needed a rereading on a different level. Maybe I was treating symptoms. The annals have a certain mystic quality for me. Maybe I could identify the disease by immersing myself, hunting something between the lines. Goblin and Silent were playing No Hands Mumbletypeg. I'll say this for our three spook pushers. They aren't great, but they keep their talents polished. Goblin was ahead on points. He was in a good mood. He even nodded to One Eye. So, it was over. The stopper could be put into the bottle. One Eye just had to say the right thing. To my amazement, he even apologized. By sign, Silent suggested we get out and let them conclude their piece in private. Each had an overabundance of pride. We stepped outside. As we often did when no one could intercept our signs, we discussed old times. He, too, was privy to the secret for which the lady would obliterate nations. Half a dozen others suspected once and had forgotten. We knew and would never forget. Those others, if put to the question, would leave the lady with serious doubts. We, too, never. We knew the identity of the lady's most potent enemy, and for 6 years we had done nothing to apprise her of the fact that that enemy even existed as more than a rebel fantasy. The rebel tends to a streak of superstition. He loves prophets and prophecies and grand dramatic foretellings of victories to come. It was pursuit of a prophecy which led him into the trap at Charm, nearly causing his extinction. He regained his balance afterward by convincing himself that he was the victim of false prophets and prophecies laid upon him by villains trickier than he. In that conviction, he could go on and believe more impossible things. The funny thing was, he lied to himself with the truth. I was perhaps the only person outside the lady's inner circle who knew he had been guided into the jaws of death. Only the enemy who had done the guiding was not the lady, as he believed. That enemy was an evil greater still, the Dominator, the lady's one-time spouse whom she had betrayed and left buried but alive in a grave in the great forest north of a far city called Orr. From that grave he had reached out, subtly, and twisted the minds of men high in rebel circles, bending them to his will, hoping to use them to drag the lady down and bring about his own resurrection. He failed, though he had help from several of the original Taken in his scheme. If he knew of my existence, I must be high on his list. He lay up there still, scheming, maybe hating me, for I helped betray the Taken helping him. Scary, that. The lady was medicine bad enough,
The Dominator, though, was the body of which her evil was but a shadow, or so the legend goes. I sometimes wonder why, if that is true, she walks the earth and he lies restless in the grave. I have done a good deal of research since discovering the power of the thing in the north, probing little-known histories, scaring myself each time. The Domination, an era when the Dominator actually ruled, smelled like an era of hell on earth. It seemed a miracle that the White Rose had put him down, a pity she could not have destroyed him, and all his minions, including the lady. The world would not be in the straits it is today. I wonder when the honeymoon will end. The lady hasn't been that terrible. When will she relax and give the darkness within her free rein, reviving the terror of the past? I also wonder about the villainies attributed to the Domination. History inevitably is recorded by self-serving victors. A scream came from Goblin's quarters. Silent and I stared at one another a moment, then rushed inside. I honestly expected one of them to be bleeding his life out on the floor. I did not expect to find Goblin having a fit, while One Eye desperately strove to keep him from hurting himself.
"Somebody made contact!" One Eye gasped. "Help me! It's strong!"
I gaped. Contact? We hadn't had a direct communication since the desperately swift campaigns when the rebel was closing in on Charm years ago. Since then, the lady and Taken have been content to communicate through messengers. The fit lasted only seconds. That was customary. Then Goblin relaxed, whimpering. It would be several minutes before he recovered enough to relay the message. We three looked at one another with card-playing faces, frightened inside. I said, "Somebody ought to tell the captain." "Yeah," One Eye said. He made no move to go. Neither did Silent. "All right, I'm elected." I went. I found the captain doing what he does best. He had his feet up on his work table, was snoring. I wakened him, told him. He sighed.
"Find the lieutenant."
He went to his map cases. I asked a couple questions he ignored, took the hint, and got out. Had he expected something like this? There was a crisis in the area. How could Charm have heard first? Silly, worrying before I heard what Goblin had to say. The lieutenant seemed no more surprised than the captain. "Something up?" I asked.
"Maybe. A courier letter came after you and Candy left for Tally. Said we might be called West. This could be it."
"West? Really?"
"Yeah."
Such dense sarcasm he put into the word. Stupid. If we chose Charm as the customary demarcation point between East and West, Tally lay 2,000-plus miles away. 3 months' travel under perfect conditions. The country between was anything but perfect. In places, roads just didn't exist. I thought 6 months sounded too optimistic. But I was worrying before the fact again. I had to wait and see. It turned out to be something even the captain and lieutenant hadn't anticipated. We waited in trepidation while Goblin pulled himself together. The captain had his map case open, sketching a tentative route to Frost. He grumbled because all westbound traffic had to cross the Plain of Fear. Goblin cleared his throat. Tension mounted. He did not lift his eyes. The news had to be unpleasant. He squeaked.
"We've been recalled. That was the lady. She seemed disturbed. The first leg goes to Frost. One of the Taken will meet us there. He'll take us on to the Barrowland."
The others frowned, exchanged puzzled looks. I muttered, "Shit. Holy shit."
"What is it, Croker?"
the captain asked. They didn't know. They paid no attention to historical things. "That's where the Dominator is buried. Where they all were buried back when. It's in the forest north of Orr." We'd been to Orr 7 years ago. It was not a friendly city.
"Orr!" the captain yelled. "Orr! That's 2,500 miles.
Add another 100 or two to the Barrowland. He stared at the maps.
Great. Just great. That means not just the Plain of Fear, but the empty hills and the windy country, too. Just fan-damn-tastic great. I suppose we've got to get there next week?
Goblin shook his head.
She didn't seem rushed, Captain. Just upset and wanting us headed the right way.
She give you any whys or wherefores?
Goblin smirked. Did the lady ever?
Hell no.
Just like that, the captain muttered. Out of the blue. Orders to hike halfway around the world. I love it.
He told the lieutenant to begin preparations for movement.
It was bad news. Mad news. Insanity squared. But not as bad as he made out. He had been preparing since receiving the courier letter. It wasn't that hard to get rolling. The trouble was, nobody wanted to roll. The West was far nicer than anything we'd known out here, but not so great anybody wanted to walk that far. Surely she could have summoned a closer unit. We are the victims of our own competence. She always wants us where the going threatens to become toughest. She knows we will do the best job. Damn and double damn.
Chapter 11. Juniper. Nightwork. Shed had given Crag only 9 of 10 leva. The coin he held back bought firewood, wine, and beer to replenish his stocks. Then other creditors caught wind of his prosperity. A slight upturn in business did him no good. He met his next payment to Crag by borrowing from a moneylender named Gilbert. He found himself wishing somebody would die. Another 10 leva would put him in striking distance of getting through the winter. It was a hard one that winter. Nothing moved in the harbor. There was no work in the buskin. Shed's only bit of good fortune was Asa. Asa brought wood whenever he got away from Crag in a pathetic effort to buy a friend. Asa arrived with a load. Privately, he said,
"Better watch out, Shed. Crag heard about you borrowing from Gilbert."
Shed went gray.
"He's got a buyer for the Lily lined up. They're rounding up girls already."
Shed nodded. The whoremasters recruited desperate women this time of year. By the time summer brought its sailors, they were broken to their trade. "The bastard. Made me think he'd given me a break. I should have known better. This way he gets my money and my place. The bastard."
"Well, I warned you."
"Yeah. Thanks, Asa." Shed's next due date came on like a juggernaut. Gilbert refused him another loan. Smaller creditors besieged the Lily. Crag was aiming them Shed's way. He took Raven a complimentary drink.
"May I sit?"
A hint of a smile crossed Raven's lips.
"It's your place."
And,
"You haven't been friendly lately, Shed."
"I'm nervous," Shed lied.
Raven irritated his conscience.
"Worried about my debts."
Raven saw through the excuse.
"You thought maybe I could help?"
Shed almost groaned.
"Yes."
Raven laughed softly. Shed thought he detected a note of triumph.
"All right, Shed. Tonight?"
Shed pictured his mother being carted off by the custodians. He swallowed his self-disgust.
"Yeah. All right. But this time, you're a helper, not a partner."
Shed swallowed and nodded.
"Put the old woman to bed, then come back downstairs. Understand?"
"Yes," Shed whispered.
"Good. Now go away. You irritate me."
"Yes, sir."
Shed retreated. He couldn't look anyone in the eye the rest of that day. A bitter wind howled down the port valley, freckled with flakes of snow. Shed huddled miserably, the wagon seat a bar of ice beneath him. The weather was worsening.
"Why tonight?" he grumbled. "Best time," Raven's teeth chattered. "We're not likely to be seen."
He turned into Chandler's Lane, off which innumerable narrow alleyways ran.
"Good hunting territory here. In this weather they crawl back in the alleys and die like flies."
Shed shivered. He was too old for this. But that was why he was here, so he wouldn't have to face the weather every night. Raven stopped the wagon.
"Check that passageway."
Shed's feet started aching the instant he put weight on them. Good. At least he felt something. They weren't frozen. There was little light in the alley. He searched more by feel than sight. He found one lump under an overhang, but it stirred and muttered. He ran. He reached the wagon as Raven dumped something into the bed. Shed averted his eyes. The boy couldn't have been more than 12. Raven concealed the body with straw.
"That's one. Night like this, we ought to find a load."
Shed choked his protests, resumed his seat. He thought about his mother. She wouldn't last one night in this. Next alley, he found his first corpse. The old man had fallen and frozen because he couldn't get up again. Aching in his soul, Shed dragged the body to the wagon.
"Going to be a good night," Raven observed. "No competition. The custodians won't come out in this."
Softly,
"I hope we can make the hill."
Later, after they had moved to the waterfront and each had found another corpse, Shed asked,
"Why are you doing this?" "I need money, too. Got a long way to travel. This way I get a lot, fast, without much risk."
Shed thought the risks far greater than Raven would admit. They could be torn apart.
"You're not from Juniper, are you?"
"From the south, a shipwrecked sailor."
Shed did not believe it. Raven's accent was not at all right for that, mild though it was. He hadn't the nerve to call the man a liar, though, and press for the truth. The conversation continued by fits and starts. Shed didn't uncover anything more of Raven's background or motives.
"Go that way," Raven told him. "I'll check over here. Last stop, Shed. I'm done in."
Shed nodded. He wanted to get the night over. To his disgust, he had begun seeing the street people as objects, and he hated them for dying in such damned inconvenient places. He heard a soft call, turned back quickly. Raven had one. That was enough. He ran to the wagon. Raven was on the seat, waiting. Shed scrambled up, huddled, tucked his face away from the wind. Raven kicked the mules into motion. The wagon was halfway across the bridge over the port when Shed heard a moan.
"What?"
One of the bodies was moving.
"Oh! Oh, shit! Raven! He's going to die anyway."
Shed huddled back down, stared at the buildings on the north bank. He wanted to argue, wanted to fight, wanted to do anything to deny his part in this atrocity. He looked up an hour later and recognized nothing. A few large houses flanked the road, widely spaced, their windows dark.
"Where are we?" "Almost there. Half an hour, unless the road is too icy."
Shed imagined the wagon sliding into a ditch. What then? Abandon everything and hope the rig couldn't be traced. Fear replaced loathing. Then he realized where they were. There wasn't anything up here but that accursed black castle.
"Raven?"
"What's the matter?"
"You're headed for the black castle."
"Where'd you think we were going?"
"People live there."
"Yes. What's your problem?"
Raven was a foreigner. He couldn't understand how the Black Castle affected Juniper. People who got too close disappeared. Juniper preferred to pretend that the place did not exist. Shed stammered out his fears. Raven shrugged.
"Shows your ignorance."
Shed saw the castle's dark shape through the snow. The fall was lighter on the ridge, but the wind was more fierce. Resigned, he muttered,
"Let's get it over with."
The shape resolved into battlements, spires, towers. Not a light shone anywhere. Raven halted before a tall gate, went forward on foot. he banged a heavy knocker. Shed huddled, hoping there would be no response. The gate opened immediately. Raven scrambled onto the wagon's seat.
"Get up, mules."
"You're not going inside."
"Why not?"
"Hey, no way. No."
"Shut up, Shed. You want your money? You help unload."
Shed stifled a whimper. He hadn't bargained for this. Raven drove through the gate, turned right, halted beneath a broad arch. A single lantern battled the darkness, clotting the passageway. Raven swung down. Shed followed, his nerves shrieking. They dragged the bodies out of the wagon and swung them onto stone slabs nearby. Then Raven said,
"Get back on the wagon. Keep your mouth shut."
The one body stirred. Shed grunted. Raven pinched his leg savagely.
"Shut up."
A shadowy shape appeared. It was tall, thin, clad in loose black pantaloons and a hooded shirt. It examined each body briefly, seemed pleased. It faced Raven. Shed glimpsed a face all of sharp angles and shadows, lustrous, olive, cold, with a pair of softly luminous eyes.
30, 30, 40, 30, 70,
it said. Raven countered.
30, 30, 50, 30, 100. 40, 80, 45, 90. 40, 90.
Done. They were dickering. Raven was not interested in quibbling over the old people. The tall being would not advance his offer for the youth, but the dying man was negotiable. Shed watched the tall being count out coins at the feet of the corpses. That was a damned fortune. 220 pieces of silver. With that, he could tear the lily down and build a new place. He could get out of the buskin altogether. Raven scooped the coins into his coat pocket. He gave Shed 5.
"That's all?"
"Isn't that a good night's work?"
It was a good month's work, and then some. But to only get 5 of...
"Last time we were partners," Raven said, swinging onto the driver's seat. "Maybe we will be again. But tonight you're a hired hand. Understand?"
There was a hard edge to his voice. Shed nodded, beset by new fears. Raven backed the wagon. Shed felt a sudden chill. That archway was hot as hell. He shuddered, feeling the hunger of the thing watching them. Dark, glassy, jointless stone slid past.
My God!
He could see into the wall. He saw bones, fragments of bones, bodies, pieces of bodies, all suspended as if floating in the night. As Raven turned toward the gate, he saw a staring face.
What kind of place is this?
I don't know, Shed. I don't want to know. All I care is they pay good money. I need it. I have a long way to go.
Chapter 12. The Barrowland. The Taken called the Limper met the company at Frost. We'd spent 146 days on the march. They were long days and hard, grinding, men and animals going on more by habit than desire. An outfit in good shape, like ours, is capable of covering 50 or even 100 miles in a day, pushing hell out of it, but not day after week. After month upon incredibly miserable roads. A smart commander does not push on a long march. The days add up, each leaving its residue of fatigue, till men begin collapsing if the pace is too desperate. Considering the territories we crossed, we made damned good time. Between Tome and Frost lie mountains where we were lucky to make 5 miles a day. Deserts we had to wander in search of water, rivers that took days to cross using makeshift rafts.
We were fortunate to reach Frost, having lost only 2 men. The captain shone with a glow of accomplishment, till the military governor summoned him. He assembled the officers and senior noncoms when he returned.
"Bad news," he told us. "The lady is sending the limper to lead us across the Plain of Fear. Us and the caravan will escort."
Our response was surly. There was bad blood between the company and the limper. Elmo asked, "How soon will we leave, sir?" We needed rest. None had been promised, of course, and the lady and the Taken seem unconscious of human frailties, but still.
"No time specified. Don't get lazy. He's not here now, but he could turn up tomorrow."
"Sure. With the flying carpets the Taken use, they can turn up anywhere within days," I muttered. "Let's hope other business keeps him away a while." I did not want to encounter him again. We had done him wrong, frequently, way back. Before Charm, we worked closely with a Taken called Soul Catcher. Catcher used us in several schemes to discredit Limper, both out of old enmity and because Catcher was secretly working on behalf of the Dominator. The lady was taken in. She nearly destroyed the Limper, but rehabilitated him instead and brought him back for the final battle. Way, way back, when the Domination was a borning, centuries before the foundation of the Lady's Empire, the Dominator overpowered his greatest rivals and compelled them into his service. He accumulated 10 villains that way, soon known as the 10 who were taken. When the White Rose raised the world against the Dominator's wickedness, the 10 were buried with him. She could destroy none of them outright. Centuries of peace sapped the will of the world to guard itself. A curious wizard tried to contact the lady. The lady manipulated him, effected her release. The 10 rose with her. Within a generation, she and they forged a new dark empire. Within 2, they were embattled with the rebel, whose prophets agreed the White Rose would be reincarnated to lead them to a final victory. For a while, it looked like they would win. Our armies collapsed. Provinces fell. Taken feuded and destroyed one another. 9 of the 10 perished. The lady managed to take 3 rebel chieftains to replace a portion of her losses. Feather, Journey, and Whisper, likely the best general since the White Rose. She gave us a terrible time before her taking. The rebel prophets were correct in their prophecies, except about the last battle. They expected a reincarnated White Rose to lead them. She did not. They did not find her in time. She was alive then, but she was living on our side of the battle line, unaware of what she was. I learned who she was. It is that knowledge which makes my life worthless should I be put to the question.
"Croaker!" the captain snapped. "Wake up!"
Everybody looked at me, wondering how I could daydream through whatever he'd said.
"What? You didn't hear me?"
"No, sir."
He glowered his best bear glower. "Listen up, then. Be ready to travel by carpet when the Taken arrive. 50 pounds of gear is your limit."
Carpet. Taken. What the hell? I looked around. Some of the men grinned. Some pitied me. Carpet flight.
"What for?"
Patiently, the captain explained.
"The lady wants 10 men sent to help Whisper and Feather in the Barrowland. Doing what, I don't know. You're one of the ones she picked."
Flutter of fear. Why me? It was rough, back when I was her pet.
"Maybe she still loves you, after all these years."
"Captain."
"Because she said so, Croaker."
"I guess that's good enough. Sure can't argue with it. Who else?"
"Pay attention and you'd know these things. Worry about it later. We have other fish to fry now."
Whisper came to Frost before the Limper. I found myself tossing a pack aboard her flying carpet. 50 pounds. The rest I had left with One Eye and Silent. The carpet was a carpet only by courtesy, because tradition calls it that. Actually, it is a piece of heavy fabric stretched on a wooden frame, a foot high when grounded. My fellow passengers were Elmo, who would command our team, and Kingpin. Kingpin is a lazy bastard, but he swings a mean blade. Our gear and another 100 pounds belonging to men who would follow us later rested at the center of the carpet. Shaking, Elmo and Kingpin tied themselves in place at the carpet's two rear corners. My spot was the left front. Whisper sat at the right. We were heavily bundled, almost to immobility. We would be flying fast and high, Whisper said. The temperature upstairs would be low. I shook as much as Elmo and Kingpin, though I had been aboard carpets before. I loved the view and dreaded the anticipation of falling that came with flight. I also dreaded the plane of fear, where strange, fell things cruise the upper air. Whisper queried,
"You all use the latrine? It's going to be a long flight."
She did not mention us voiding ourselves in fear, which some men do up there. Her voice was cool and melodious, like those of the women who populate your last dream before waking. Her appearance belied that voice. She looked every bit the tough old campaigner she was. She eyed me, evidently recalling our previous encounter in the Forest of Cloud. Raven and I had lain in wait where she was expected to meet the Limper and lead him over to the rebel side. The ambush was successful. Raven took the Limper, I captured Whisper. Soulcatcher and the Lady came and finished up. Whisper became the first new taken since the domination. She winked. Taut fabric smacked my butt. We went up fast. Crossing the Plain of Fear was faster by air, but still harrowing. Wind whales quartered across our path. We zipped around them. They were too slow to keep pace. Turquoise manta things rose from their backs, flapped clumsily, caught updrafts, rose above us, then dived past like plunging eagles, challenging our presence in their airspace. We could not outrun them, but outclimbed them easily. However, we could not climb higher than the wind whales. So high and the air becomes too rare for human beings. The whales could rise another mile, becoming diving platforms for the mantas. There were other flying things, smaller and less dangerous, but determinedly obnoxious. Nevertheless, we got through. When a manta did attack, Whisper defeated it with her thaumaturgic craft. To do so, she gave up control of the carpet. We fell, out of control, till she drove the manta away. I got through without losing my breakfast, but just barely. I never asked Elmo and Kingpin, figuring they might not want their dignity betrayed. Whisper would not attack first. That is the prime rule for surviving the Plane of Fear. Don't hit first. If you do, you buy more than a duel. Every monster out there will go after you. We crossed without harm, as carpets usually do, and raced on all day long into the night. We turned north. The air became cooler. Whisper dropped to lower altitudes and slower speeds. Morning found us over Forsberg, where the company had served when new in the Lady's service. Elmo and I gawked over the side. Once I pointed, shouted, "There's Deal!" We had held that fortress briefly. Then Elmo pointed the other way. There lay Orr, where we had pulled some fine, bloody tricks on the rebel and earned the enmity of the Limper. Whisper flew so low we could distinguish faces in the streets. Orr looked no more friendly than it had 8 years ago. We passed on, rolled along above the treetops of the great forest, ancient and virgin wilderness from which the White Rose had conducted her campaigns against the Dominator. Whisper slowed around noon. We drifted down into a wide sprawl that once had been cleared land. A cluster of mounds in its middle betrayed the handiwork of man, though now the barrows are scarcely recognizable.
Whisper landed in the street of a town that was mostly ruin. I presumed it to be the town occupied by the Eternal Guard, whose task it is to prevent tampering with the Barrowland. They were effective, till betrayed by apathy elsewhere. It took the Resurrectionists 370 years to open the Barrowland, and then they did not get what they wanted. The Lady returned with the Taken, but the Dominator remained chained. The Lady obliterated the Resurrectionist movement, root and branch. Some reward, eh? A handful of men left a building still in good repair. I eavesdropped on their exchange with Whisper, understood a few words. "Recall your Forsberger?" I asked Elmo, while trying to shake the stiffness out of my muscles. "It'll come back. Want to give Kingpin a look? He don't seem right." He wasn't bad off, just scared. Took a while to convince him we were back on the ground. The locals, descendants of the guards who had watched the Barrowland for centuries, showed us to our quarters. The town was being restored. We were the forerunners of a horde of new blood. Goblin and two of our best soldiers came in on Whisper's next flight 3 days later. They said the company had left Frost. I asked if it looked like the Limper was holding a grudge. "Not that I could see," Goblin said. "But that don't mean anything." No, it didn't. The last four men arrived 3 days later. Whisper moved into our barracks. We formed a sort of bodyguard-come-police force. Besides protecting her, we were supposed to help make sure unauthorized persons did not get near the Barrowland. The Taken called Feather appeared, bringing her own bodyguard. Specialists determined to investigate the Barrowland came up with a battalion of laborers hired in ore. The laborers cleared the trash and brush up to the Barrowland proper. Entry there, without appropriate protection, meant a slow, painful death. The protective spells the White Rose left hadn't faded with the Lady's resurrection, and she had added her own. I guess she is terrified he will break loose. The Taken Journey arrived, bringing troops of his own. He established outposts in the Great Forest. The Taken took turns making airborne patrols. We minions watched one another as closely as we watched the rest of the world. Something big was afoot. Nobody was saying so, but that much was obvious. The Lady definitely anticipated a breakout attempt. I spent my free time reviewing the guards' records, especially for the period when Bowmans lived here. He spent 40 years in the garrison town, disguised as an antique digger, before he tried to contact the Lady and unintentionally freed her. He interested me, but there was little to dig out, and that little was colored. Once I'd had his personal papers, having stumbled onto them shortly before Whisper's taking, but I passed them on to our then-mentor Soulcatcher for transportation to the tower. Soulcatcher kept them for her own reasons, and they fell into my hands again during the battle at Charm as the Lady and I pursued the renegade Taken. I didn't mention the papers to anyone but a friend, Raven, the Raven who deserted to protect a child he believed to be the reincarnation of the White Rose. When I got a chance to pick up the papers from where I hid them, they were gone. I guess Raven took them with him. I often wonder what became of him. His declared intent was to flee so far no one could find him again. He did not care about politics. He just wanted to protect a child he loved. He was capable of doing anything to protect Darling. I guess he thought the papers might turn into insurance someday. In the guard headquarters, there are a dozen landscapes painted by past members of the garrison. Most portray the Barrowland. It was magnificent in its day. It had consisted of a central great barrow on a north-south axis, containing the Dominator and his Lady. Surrounding the great barrow was a star of earth raised above the plain, outlined by a deep, water-filled moat.
At the points of that star stood lesser barrows containing 5 of the 10 who were taken. A circle rising above the star connected its inward points, and there, at each, stood another barrow containing another taken. Every barrow was surrounded by spells and fetishes. Within the inner ring, around the great barrow, were rank on rank of additional defenses. The last was a dragon curled around the great barrow, its tail in its mouth. A later painting by an eyewitness shows the dragon belching fire onto the countryside the night of the lady's resurrection. Bowmans is walking into the fire. He was caught between resurrectionists and the lady, all of whom were manipulating him. His accident was their premeditated event. The records say his wife survived. She said he went into the Barrowland to stop what was happening. No one believed her at the time. She claimed he carried the lady's true name and wanted to reach her with it before she could wriggle free. Silent, One Eye, and Goblin will tell you the direst fear of any sorcerer is that knowledge of his true name will fall to some outsider. Bowmans's wife claimed the lady's was encoded in papers her husband possessed. Papers that vanished that night. Papers that I recovered decades later. What Raven snatched may contain the only lever capable of dumping the Empire. Back to the Barrowland in its youth. Impressive construction. Its weather faces were sheathed in limestone. The moat was broad and blue. The surrounding countryside was park-like. But fear of the Dominator faded, and so did appropriations. A later painting, contemporary with Bowman's, shows the countryside gone to seed, the limestone facings in disrepair, and the moat becoming a swamp. Today, you can't tell where the moat was. The limestone has disappeared beneath brush. The elevations and barrows are nothing but humps. That part of the great barrow where the Dominator lies remains in fair shape, though it, too, is heavily overgrown. Some of the fetishes anchoring the spells keeping his friends away still stand, but weather has devoured their features. The edge of the Barrowland is now marked by stakes trailing red flags, put there when the lady announced she was sending outsiders to investigate. The guards themselves, having lived there always, need no markers to warn them off. I enjoyed my month and a half there. I indulged my curiosities and found Feather and Whisper remarkably accessible. That hadn't been true of the old Taken. Two, the commander of the guard, called the Monitor, bragged up his command's post, which stretches back as far as the company's. We swapped lies and tales over many a gallon of beer. During the 5th week, someone discovered something. We peons were not told what, but the Taken got excited. Whisper started lifting in more of the company. The reinforcements told harrowing fables about the Plain of Fear and the Empty Hills. The company was at Lord's now, only 500 miles distant. At the end of the 6th week, Whisper assembled us and announced another move.
The lady wants me to take some of you out west, a force of 25. Elmo, you'll be in command. Feather and I, some experts and several language specialists will join you. Yes, Croaker, you're on the list. She wouldn't deny her favorite amateur historian, would she?
A thrill of fear. I didn't want her getting interested again. Where are we headed? Elmo asked. Professional to the core, the son of a bitch. Not a single complaint.
A city called Juniper, way beyond the western bounds of the Empire. It's connected with the Barrowland somehow. It's a ways north, too. Expect it to be cold, and prepare accordingly.
Juniper. Never heard of it. Neither had anyone else, not even the Monitor. I scrounged through his maps till I found one showing the western coast. Juniper was way up north, near where the ice persists all year long. It was a big city,
I wondered how it could exist there, where it should be frozen all the time. I asked Whisper. She seemed to know something about the place. She said Juniper benefits from an ocean current that brings warm water north. She said the city is very strange, according to Feather, who'd actually been there. I approached Feather next, only hours before our departure. She couldn't tell me much more, except that Juniper is the domain of a Duke Zimmerlin, and he appealed to the lady a year ago, just a while before the captain's courier letter would have left Charm, for help solving a local problem. That someone had approached the lady when the world's desire is to keep her far away argued that we faced interesting times. I wondered about the connection with the Barrowland. The negative was that Juniper was so far away. I was pleased that I would be there when the captain learned he was expected to head there after resting in ore, though. Could be I'd hear his howl of outrage even from that far. I knew he wouldn't be happy.
Chapter 13. Juniper, the Enclosure. Shed slept badly for weeks. He dreamt of black glass walls and a man who hadn't been dead. Twice Raven asked him to join a night hunt. Twice he refused. Raven did not press, though they both knew Shed would jump if he insisted. Shed prayed that Raven would get rich and disappear. He remained a constant irritant to the conscience. Damn it, why didn't Crag go after him? Shed couldn't figure why Raven remained unperturbed by Crag. The man was neither a fool nor stupid. The alternative, that he wasn't scared, made no sense. Not to Marin Shed. Asa remained on Crag's payroll, but visited regularly, bringing firewood. By the wagon load, sometimes. "What are you up to?" Shed demanded one day. "Trying to build credit," Asa admitted. "Crag's guys don't like me much." "Hardly anybody does, Asa. They might try something nasty. Want a place to hide when they turn on you, eh? What are you doing for Crag? Why is he bothering with you?" Asa hemmed and hawed. Shed pushed. Here was a man he could bully. "I watch Raven, Shed. I report what he does." Shed snorted. Crag was using Asa because he was expendable. He'd had two men disappear early on. Shed thought he knew where they were. Sudden fear. Suppose Asa reported Raven's night adventures. Suppose he'd seen Shed. Impossible. Asa couldn't have kept quiet. Asa spent his life looking for leverage. "You've been spending a lot lately, Asa. Where are you getting the money?" Asa turned pale. He looked around, gobbled a few times.
"The wood, Shed. Selling the wood."
"You're a liar, Asa. Where are you getting it?"
"Shed, you don't ask questions like that."
"Maybe not, but I need money bad. I owe Crag. I almost had him paid off. Then he started buying my little debts from everybody else. That damned Gilbert. I need to get ahead enough so I don't have to borrow again."
The Black Castle. 220 pieces of silver.
How he had been tempted to attack Raven. And Raven just smiled into the wind, knowing exactly what he was thinking.
"Where are you getting that money, Asa?"
"Where did you get the money you paid Crag, huh? People are wondering, Shed. You don't come up with that kind of money overnight. Not you. You tell me, and I'll tell you."
Shed backed down. Asa beamed in triumph.
"You little snake. Get out before I lose my temper."
Asa fled. He looked back once, face knotted thoughtfully. "Damn it," Shed thought. Made him suspicious. He ground his rag into a tacky mug.
"What was that?"
Shed spun. Raven had come to the counter. His look brooked no crap. Shed gave him the gist.
"So Crag hasn't quit."
"You don't know him, or you wouldn't ask. It's you or him, Raven."
"Then it has to be him, doesn't it?"
Shed gaped. "A suggestion, Shed. Follow your friend when he goes wood-gathering." Raven returned to his seat. He spoke to Darling animatedly, in sign, which he blocked from Shed's view. The set of the girl's shoulders said she was against whatever it was he was proposing. 10 minutes later, he left the Lily. Each afternoon, he went out for a few hours. Shed suspected he was testing Crag's watchers. Darling leaned against the doorframe, watching the street. Shed watched her, his gaze sliding up and down her frame. "Ravens," he thought. "They're thick. I don't dare. But she was such a fine-looking thing, tall, lean of leg, ready for a man. He was a fool. He did not need to get caught in that trap, too. He had troubles enough." "I think today would be good for it," Raven said as Shed delivered his breakfast. "Eh? Good for what?" "For a hike up the hill to watch friend Asa." "Oh, no, I can't. Got nobody to watch the place." Back by the counter, Darling bent to pick something off the floor. Shed's eyes widened and his heart fluttered. He had to do something. Visit a whore or something. Or get hurt. But he couldn't afford to pay for it. Darling couldn't handle it alone.
"Your cousin Wally has stood in for you before."
Caught off balance, Shed could not marshal his excuses quickly. And Darling was driving him to distraction. She had to start wearing something that concealed the shape of her behind better.
He couldn't deal with Darling. Doesn't know the signs."
Raven's face darkened slightly.
"Give her the day off. Get that girl Lisa you used when Darling was sick."
Lisa, Shed thought. Another hot one.
"I only use Lisa when I'm here to watch her."
A hot one not attached.
"She'll steal me blinder than my mother, Shed."
"Eh?" "Get Wally and Lisa here, then go keep an eye on Asa. I'll make sure they don't carry off the family silver."
"But..."
Raven slapped a palm on the tabletop.
"I said go!"
The day was clear and bright, and for winter, warm. Shed picked up Asa's trail outside Crag's establishment. Asa rented a wagon. Shed was amazed. In winter, stable keepers demanded huge deposits. Draft animals slaughtered and eaten had no provenance. He thought it a miracle anyone trusted Asa with a team. Asa went directly to the enclosure. Shed stalked along behind, keeping his head down, confident Asa would not suspect him even if he looked back. The streets were crowded. Asa left the wagon in a public grove across a lane running alongside the wall which girdled the enclosure. It was one of many similar groves where Juniper's citizenry gathered for the spring and autumn rites for the dead. The wagon could not be seen from the lane. Shed squatted in shadow and bush and watched Asa dash to the enclosure wall. Somebody ought to clear that brush away, Shed thought. It made the wall look tacky. For that matter, the wall needed repairing. Shed crossed and found a gap through which a man could duck walk. He crept through. Asa was crossing an open meadow, hurrying uphill toward a stand of pines. The inner face of the wall was brush-masked, too. Scores of bundles of wood lay among the bushes. Asa had more industry than Shed had suspected. Hanging around Crag's gang had changed him. They had him scared for sure. Asa entered the pines. Shed puffed after him. Ahead, Asa sounded like a cow pushing through the underbrush. The whole enclosure was tacky. In Shed's boyhood, it had been park-like, a fit waiting place for those who had gone before. Now it had the threadbare look that characterized the rest of Juniper. Shed crept toward Hammering Racket. What was Asa doing, making so much noise? He was cutting wood from a fallen tree, stacking the pieces in neat bundles. Shed could not picture the little man orderly, either. What a difference terror made. An hour later, Shed was ready to give up.
He was cold and hungry and stiff. He had wasted half a day. Asa was doing nothing remarkable, but he persevered. He had a time investment to recoup, and an irritable raven awaiting his report. Asa worked hard. When not chopping, he hustled bundles down to his wagon. Shed was impressed. He stayed, watched, and told himself he was a fool. This was going nowhere. Then Asa became furtive. He collected his tools and concealed them, looked around warily. This is it, Shed thought. Asa took off uphill. Shed puffed after him. His stiff muscles protested every step. Asa traveled more than a mile through lengthening shadows. Shed almost lost him. A clinking brought him back to the track. The little man was using flint and steel. He crouched over a supply of torches wrapped in an oilskin taken from hiding. He got a brand burning, hastened into some brush. A moment later, he clambered over some rocks beyond, disappeared. Shed gave it a minute, then followed. He slid round the boulder where he had seen Asa last. Beyond lay a crack in the earth, just big enough to admit a man. "My God," Shed whispered. "He's found a way into the catacombs. He's looting the dead." "I came straight back," Shed gasped. Raven was amused by his distress. "I knew Asa was foul, but I never dreamed he'd commit sacrilege." Raven smiled. "Aren't you disgusted?" "No. Why are you? He didn't steal any bodies." Shed came within a hair's breadth of assaulting him. He was worse than Asa. "He making out at it?" "Not as well as you. The custodians take all the burial gifts except passage urns." Every corpse in the catacombs was accompanied by a small sealed urn, usually fixed on a chain around the body's neck. The custodians did not touch the few coins in those. When the day of passage came, the boatman would demand payment for passage to paradise. "All those souls stranded," Shed murmured. He explained. Raven looked baffled. "How can anybody with an ounce of brains believe that crap? Dead is dead. Be quiet, Shed. Just answer questions. How many bodies in the catacombs?" "Who knows? They've been putting them away since, hell, for 1,000 years. Maybe there's millions." "Must have them stacked like cordwood." Shed wondered about that. The catacombs were vast, but 1,000 years' worth of cadavers from a city Juniper's size would make a hell of a pile. He looked at Raven. Damn the man. "It's Asa's racket. Let's not try."
"Why not?"
"Too dangerous."
"Your friend hasn't suffered."
"He's small time. If he gets greedy, he'll get killed. There are guardians down there. Monsters."
"Describe them."
"I can't."
"Can't or won't?"
"Can't. All they tell you is that they're there."
"I see." Raven rose.
"This needs investigating. Don't discuss it, especially not with Asa." "Oh, no."
Panicked, Asa would do something stupid.
Word drifted in off the street. Crag had sent his two best men after Raven. They had disappeared. Three more had vanished since. Crag himself had been injured by an unknown assailant. He had survived only because of Count's immense strength. Count wasn't expected to live. Shed was terrified. Crag was neither reasonable nor rational. He asked Raven to move out. Raven stared at him in contempt.
"Look, I don't want him killing you here," Shed said.
"Bad for business."
"For my health, maybe. He's got to kill you now. People will stop being scared of him if he doesn't."
"He won't learn, eh? A damned city of fools."
Asa boiled through the doorway. "Shed, I gotta talk to you."
He was scared.
"Crag thinks I turned him over to Raven. He's after me. You gotta hide me, Shed."
"Like hell."
The trap was closing. Two of them here. Crag would kill for sure, would dump his mother into the street.
"Shed, I kept you in wood all winter. I kept Crag off your back."
"Oh, sure. So I should get killed, too."
"You owe me, Shed. I never told nobody how you go out at night with Raven. Maybe Crag would want to know that, huh?
Shed grabbed Asa's hands and yanked him forward against the counter. As if cued, Raven stepped up behind the little man. Shed glimpsed a knife. Raven pricked Asa's back, whispered, "Let's go to my room." Asa went pallid. Shed forced a smile.
"Yeah."
He released Asa, took a stoneware bottle from beneath the counter. "I want to talk to you, Asa." He collected three mugs. Shed went up last, intensely aware of his mother's blind stare. How much had she heard? How much had she guessed? She had been cool lately. His shame had come between them. He no longer felt deserving of her respect. He clouted his conscience.